Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
A major ruling in favor of Uber and Lyft drivers in California. The sheer greed at Nabisco. And today on the show, our independent labor voice, Tom Buffenbarger, and Iron Workers Local 7 in New England. Welcome to the Tuesday, August 24th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. We have two guests on the show today, Tom Buffenbarger, retired general president of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, retired well over 5 years now. And during that time, he has become our independent labor observer, loves the show so much he wants to contribute on a monthly basis. The first thing he's going to talk about is the passing of the late great labor leader, Richard Trumka, passed away almost 3 weeks ago at the age of 72 while he was on a family vacation. And last Friday, in case you missed the show yesterday, the AFL-CIO Executive Council elected Liz Schuler. She was in the secretary-treasurer position. She is going to take over Rich's job as president, and she will have that position until June of next year. That's when the full AFL-CIO meets and decide what they're going to do. Filling in her position, Fred Redman, who we know so well on the show. In fact, we had him on the show yesterday. If you missed it, awfradio.com. Comes from the steelworkers, 50-some years at the steelworkers, and he was a vice president there in charge of human affairs. Now, he's going to take the secretary-treasurer position, and Tafir Gebra will continue as executive vice president. A lot of changes. Tom is going to reflect on the future of the AFL-CIO, and I'm sure he'll share some stories. I know he was very, very close with Rich Trumka. In fact, it was Tommy who called me the morning of August 5th. I was wondering, why was I getting a call from him? And he said, Flash, Rich Trumka passed away. And I was just stunned. But I'm sure he's going to talk about his career in labor, what he meant. And we should point out, Rich was working tirelessly to get the PRO Act passed, Protect the Right to Organize. And over the weekend, House leaders and Senate leaders got together and said, we are going to call it the Rich Trumka PRO Act. So we'll talk about that. And we're also going to get into Afghanistan. I have to ask the question, how come the Democrats are not supporting Joe Biden on what's going on there? We have to point out, no Americans have died. I know some people have died, but no Americans have died. And Biden is getting beaten up on both sides of the aisle on this whole situation. And Tom said, he told me yesterday, you know what? I think he's doing a pretty good job. He'll explain that. Second guest is Grant Provost. Grant is the business agent for Ironworkers Local 7 in Maine, and he helps run their apprenticeship program. Comes from a union family. His mom was a union teacher, his father an iron worker. He joined Local 7 in 1999 and has been a member since. Talk about a rich history. For more than 120 years, Local 7 has proudly represented union iron workers across Massachusetts, New Hampshire, and Maine. They were originally formed in 1896 in Philadelphia. Then they moved to Boston after the initial charter was revoked in 1902. Upon the move, Boston became the first city in the country with two iron worker locals, the other being Local 4. Now, 4 merged with Local 7 to form one of the largest locals in the region. And today they have well over 3,000 members. We'll get a complete update from Grant. They saw huge expansion following World War II. iron and steel became prevalent building materials in construction, and demand for skilled union iron workers increased. So they really took off in World War II, or past World War II. We're going to talk about the apprenticeship program, and apparently, especially in that area, there's a lot of offshore wind development going on. Grant's going to touch on that, how the iron workers are involved, and more importantly than anything, making sure that there's project labor agreements involved in any new construction. That is so near and dear to labor. Project labor agreements. Project labor agreements. Prevailing wage is important too, no doubt. But it'd be great if you can get project labor agreements on all these new construction deals that they're working out, especially with the offshore wind. It's pretty exciting. And Grant is in the middle of it all, so he'll be our second guest on the show. I love talking about good news. Right now, let's savor the moment, because this is a court case, and you know how things bounce back and forth. Well, on Friday, a California Superior Court judge, the state's trial court system, held that Proposition 22, which, among other provisions, permitted gig companies like Uber, Lyft, DoorDash, Instacart, and others to classify their workers as independent contractors rather than employees, thus enabling them to evade a host of labor and employment laws, is unconstitutional and not enforceable. How about that? The lawsuit brought by the Service Employees International Union and several drivers was rejected by the California Supreme Court in February, which declined to hear the state constitutional challenge and instead order the plaintiffs to refile the suit in a lower venue. Well, Alameda County Superior Judge Frank Roisch presided over the most recent case. Now, according to the judge, Proposition 22 is unconstitutional for two reasons. First, because it exempts app-based drivers from what's called the ABC test, which would otherwise be utilized to determine their status as employees or independent contractors. It also removes them from participation in the state's workers' compensation system and thereby infringes on the power of the California legislature to, quote, create and enforce a complete system of workers' compensation, which, per the California Constitution, is what they call a plenary power vested in the legislature. Plenary means absolute power. In short, if the people wish to use their initiative power, they must first do it by initiative constitutional amendment, not by statute. I know I'm getting into some of the gobbledygook here, but the second point I want to make, it's because it includes a provision that deals with collective bargaining rights, prohibiting legislation authorizing drivers to collectively bargain. Proposition 22 thus violates the state's constitution's single subject rule, which requires that initiative statutes be limited to a single subject. Boy, they really got into the details on this. But just want to wrap up by saying, because Proposition 22 was a ballot initiative, and since a ballot initiative cannot be amended after being passed by voters, any unconstitutional provision renders the entire law unenforceable. And that's what the judge pretty much ruled. Uber, which along with other gig companies spent more than $220 million last year on the campaign, the most expensive in the nation's history, say they will appeal the decision, which defies both logic and the law. Now, the case will next be heard by the State Court of Appeals, after which it could end up in front of the California Supreme Court again, although the process could take a year or more. One to watch, no doubt about that. So hats off to that judge. Again, that's a superior judge in California, saying the law, Proposition 22, is unconstitutional and unenforceable. As hundreds of Nabisco factory workers across the country continue their ongoing strike against Mondelez International, that's the parent company that makes Oreos, Ritz crackers, Chips Ahoy, they are reported to have shuttered numerous Nabisco plants in recent years to offshore cheaper labor markets. And in doing so, they posted nearly $6 billion in profits in the second quarter of this year. Not bad, huh? The company, this confectionery conglomerate, as they call it, has been slashing overtime pay and health benefits for hundreds of its workers. They also spent $1.5 billion on stock buybacks in the first half of this year. And they paid their CEO, Dirk Van de Poot, nearly $20 million in total compensation last year, which, by the way, is 544 times more than the annual compensation of the company's median employee. Darlene Carpenter is a business agent for the Bakers Union, Local 358, and she said it's real simple. It's greed. They don't have any respect for their workers that gave them the opportunity to make that kind of money. We're peons to them, she said. Here's what you can do to support the striking Nabisco workers. Just go to GoFundMe and punch in Bakery Local 358. And they also posted on Facebook and various other social media platforms. And they have a video, which I want to play right now, talking about the workers and what they're dealing with at Mondelez International. Again, the company that gobbled up Nabisco. Let's listen.
People can be forced to working up to 60, 70 days. I've personally worked 45 days in a row without a day off.
We want to be treated like we're people instead of like slaves.
The company has never given us anything, but corporate greed is taking everything away. And we'll be out here until we can stop corporate greed.
When you bite a Chips Ahoy, we bet you bite a chip.
Who can resist the golden buttery milk in your mouth taste of a Ritz?
Oreo, unlock the magic.
Nabisco.
They came with some demands in the last negotiation that were all takeaways. They wanted to take our overtime away. They wanted to put us on a 7-day work schedule, 12-hour days.
They currently want to change our overtime pay so that if you work all that time, you will end up eventually getting paid less for working that amount of time.
Your impact is going to be about a $40,000 a year loss for all the workers across the board.
They've actually closed two factories recently, and they don't disclose where their production's going, but we know it's going to Mexico.
It sucks. I just turned 55 years old, got 37 years.
With the COVID-19, I don't know who's going to hire me right now.
Is everything going to Mexico? All of it.
I grew up with Nabisco products, Oreo, cream and crackers, Chip Ahoy's. I knew they were made here. I knew they were made around the corner from where I live. To see those things go to another country where people are making less pay and the company is still making billions, it's disheartening.
I've been here since 1987, so I guess it'd be 34, 35 years. This company has actually squeezed everything out of it they could.
They don't even want us to step onto the grass of the property, so they're putting a fence up right on the property line. They're basically kicking the employees to the curb.
We want the community to support us. We want America to support us. We don't want you to buy Nabisco products, not during our strike. When we come back to work, we want you to support Nabisco products, but only Nabisco products made in America. If you read the back of the label, it will say made in America or made in Mexico or made in Canada. And we want to keep our jobs in America. We want to keep middle class. And right now they're trying to destroy it all.
So sad. So sad what they've done to that company. Again, that's the Bakery, Confectionery, Tobacco, and Grain Millers. And we're specifically talking about Local 358. That's a number of employees that you just heard. They set up a GoFundMe page to help them out during this strike. And there's a couple of other cities where the bakers are making those products. They're also on strike as we speak. All right. Take a quick break. When we come back, Tommy Buffenbarger, our independent labor voice.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you were exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at KellyandFerraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Nurses, doctors, and caregivers at the VA are under attack. They face hostile management, callous agency heads, and an administration that's stomping all over their ability to speak up for our veterans. Unions are even being kicked out of their offices, a direct attempt to silence the voice of VA employees. When VA workers are under attack, veterans pay the price. Costly privatization and outsourcing will run rampant, meaning fewer services and worse quality of care for our nation's heroes. It's time to stand up for the workers who care for our veterans. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle, real simple, AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Area Labor Federation, all connected to the AFL-CIO. Lots of changes in the AFL-CIO, which we're going to talk about with Tommy Buffenbarger, our next guest. Hey, Thomas, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us once again.
Great to be back, Flash, and looking forward to today's episode.
Hey, before we talk about the AFL-CIO and Rich Trumka, I just want to report, and I saw this on the Machinist website, goiam.org, that the union just reached a strong new tentative agreement at Southwest Airlines for 7,000 customer service employees. We're talking customer reps, customer service agents, and what they call source of support representatives. Got a comment here from Dave Suplee, who is the directing general chair for District 142, saying, "I am incredibly proud of our negotiating committee and our membership at Southwest Airlines. IAM members at Southwest are constantly recognized for creating a top-notch experience for customers." And you know what? I want to second that, because I have flown with my wife many times when we do our annual vacation. Of course, we haven't done that recently due to the pandemic. We often go to the Caribbean, the Dominican Republic, and we take Southwest, and what a great airline. And I really like them because you get two bags free. We like to take a lot of junk with us while we're gone. And it just, I tell you, service is number one with that airline, and that speaks highly, especially of the employees and the union representation there. I just wanted to make a few comments. If you want to join in on that, Tommy, I'm sure you've had experience.
Flash, I want to second everything you said. I fly Southwest myself when I fly, which has been a while now. I take it to Texas every year for my getaway down in South Texas to do some quail hunting. And I fly Southwest, and it is the number one airline for customer service. They treat everybody well. And what you can tell in the employees, and I've seen it firsthand because we represented them, is they're happy. And if they're happy, why? It's because they got a good union contract that backs them up at work every day, and they reap the benefits from that. And so if other airlines would kind of emulate a more modern approach to employee relations like Southwest Airlines take, maybe flying would be fun again on the other airlines. So I highly second Southwest Airlines for being a great, great flying experience.
I'm reading in the press release, too, they're hoping that the contract will serve as a model for the industry. So to your point, yeah, let's follow the lead of a well-union-represented airline like Southwest. I like that. I like that a lot. All right. I want to talk about the passing of Rich Trumka. I know you two were very, very close, and I appreciate the call a couple of weeks ago when you told me. It's one of those days I will not forget for a whole long time, but I'm sure you watched over the weekend when it was announced, actually on Friday, some changes that are going to happen. And I guess during the time when he passed, it's automatic that Liz Shuler, who's the Secretary-Treasurer, becomes the acting president. And then on Friday, they confirmed that, at least till June. So let's pick it up from there. Passing of the baton. Let's start with Trumka.
Rich and I go way, way back, actually to the 1970s, late 70s, and in, through the 80s and 90s. When Rich emerged as the president of the mine workers in the 1980s, after a very hard-fought and a very contentious campaign, and Rich was opposing the incumbent leadership at the time, Sam Church, who I knew as well. And Rich emerged the victor and moved to Washington to lead the Great Mine Workers Union. And at that time, our Union International president was my mentor, Bill Wimpesinger, another Cleveland guy, was president of the Machinists, and he and Rich, Wimpy became a mentor to Rich and kind of helped him figure out the ways of the AFL-CIO and the political landscape in Washington. So Rich spent a lot of time popping in at IAM headquarters when it was downtown Washington and very close to the mine workers' headquarters, and to have discussions. And that's where I met him, and we just struck up a great friendship. And for all these years, through Rich's movement as Secretary-Treasurer at the AFL-CIO to becoming the president 10 years ago, it's been amazing to watch him. A very bright, a very talented and gifted guy. And a colleague. I mean, we did other things than our union jobs together. We like to spend time in the outdoors with each other and, you know, hunt, fish, do all those kind of things. And you get to know a guy like that pretty well. And this man was dedicated to the American worker, like very few people can be. He lived his whole life around it. In one respect, his death was a shock. Just 2 weeks before, we were at a union sportsman's function together, having a good time, raising funds for the organization, and visiting with a bunch of union members who showed up for the event. And everything seemed fine. And to get the call that, you know, when you hear the words, "Tom, are you sitting down?" That's always a bad sign. And I see why. And it says, "Rich passed away." And I didn't even think it was Rich Trunk, but I thought it may be somebody else I knew named Rich. And I was in shock. And the only consolation is Rich was camping with his wife and his grandsons, outdoors, doing what he loved to do. And so if your time is up and the expiration date arrives, Rich was probably where he would have chosen to be. Having said all that, and that he was an exemplary labor leader, he did leave the AFL-CIO in good hands with Liz Shuler. I'm a huge supporter of Liz Shuler. We worked together for all the years she was Secretary-Treasurer. I was privileged to co-chair the AFL-CIO's Finance Committee with her. And this is one sharp lady who comes from a great union, the IBEW. She worked her way through the ranks. And when Ed Hill who was then the international president for the electrical workers, gave me a call one day looking for support when there was the elections at the AFL-CIO coming up. He says, do you think I could get you to consider the machinists supporting Liz? And without a doubt, the answer was yes. And she was successful, and she has done a spectacular job. In the hardest times, we found ourselves since the Great Depression. Liz has taken us through, of course, 4 years of the Trump administration. She's been there for, of course, to the Obama years, but at the tail end of the Bush administration. So she's seen really bad times trying to manage a very large organization and its finances, keeping us positioned to do the things we need to do for American working people, and hoping one day to see light at the end of the tunnel. And she never wavered, never got despondent or despaired over her job. She attacked it. And I'm proud and happy to see that the current executive board of the AFL-CIO saw fit to give her the support she needs. It was a huge signal because there was no candidate against her to confirm this position, and now it's moving forward again. So she's got a big job. She's certainly up to it. She was well trained and exposed to all the ins and outs by Rich. And time moves forward, as does the AFL-CIO.
Well, she certainly has got some big shoes to fill with Rich Trumka, but I like what you said about her, especially facing challenges, because, Tommy, you know this. You really don't see the real person until there are challenges. You know, when times are good, everybody kind of coasts. But when there's bumps in the road, and there have been many for labor over the years, how you navigate through them, how you react to them, that shows the true leadership. And obviously, that's what they saw in Liz Shuler. That's good. That's good. You know, we had Fred Redmond on the show yesterday. Fred got the number two spot, Secretary Treasurer. He was great on the show. Any thoughts on Fred taking that position, Tom?
Absolutely. I know Fred Redmond pretty well from my years before I retired, and Fred was with the steelworkers, and spent time with Fred, and I love this man, and I think they couldn't have made a better choice than Fred Redmond to step into Liz's shoes. He's sharp. He's certainly in tune. He has a feel for what's out there and what the needs and the expectations are of working people. And his experience with a large union certainly sets him up for understanding what the needs are going to be for the AFL-CIO. And I am very proud of the fact that they took Fred and moved him forward. And, you know, he's got a very special way about him. He comes across as a very thoughtful person. He can be very funny at times. But he puts people at ease. And in troubled times, you need a reassuring figure like that, especially in such a big job. So with Liz and Fred there at the helm of the AFL-CIO now, with the huge job they've got in front of them, I'm confident we got the people that certainly match the challenge.
When you say he's a funny guy, I had a little fun with him yesterday on the show. You know, he's in Washington this week, and he's staying at a Hilton hotel. Now, I don't know if you know this, but Hilton announced about a week or two ago that they're not going to clean their rooms every day. Part of it is they have a labor shortage. The other part is they just want to be cheap. And they're going to, I don't know when they're going to clean them, maybe every other day, every 3 days. So I talked to Fred about that. I said, is your room clean? And he says, well, it is now. And he's mad at the AFL-CIO for putting him in the Hilton. I know it's a union hotel, but nonetheless, I said, well, I'll check with you at the end of the week. He said, Flash, I may not be here.
That's Fred. That is Fred. And he's right. They should put him up in a different hotel. And there's plenty of union hotels in Washington to choose from. So, but that sounds like him. That sounds like him.
All right, we got to take a quick break. Tommy Buffenbarger joining us on our live line, having some fun with him. We're going to talk about Afghanistan next. And later in the show, we're going to check in with Iron Workers Local 7 out of New England. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, we are available on 5 platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. When you get an opportunity, just take a minute, sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We always appreciate a 5-star rating, and we're getting more of those, so we're moving the needle in the right direction. Let's go back to our live line and rejoin Tommy Buffenbarger, our independent labor voice. And I know you want to talk about the situation in Afghanistan, and I'd like to hear your point of view. I am, frankly, a bit upset that Democrats haven't rallied around Biden. This is the time where he needs some support, and he's dealing with a really difficult situation. And what we need to point out, no Americans have died in this evacuation. But, Tommy, what's your point of view on this whole thing?
Well, thanks for asking that, Flash, because I do have a point of view, and I agree with you. I am upset with the Democrats, and I am upset with the other party as well for not rallying behind the president during this crisis. Remember, the object is to get Americans and our allies safely out of Afghanistan. And all this stuff they're whining about now doesn't even rank in the top 10 issues of importance. They should be supporting the president and offering assistance and verbal support instead of doing what they're doing. Joe Biden told America when he was a candidate he was going to end the war and get us out of Afghanistan. Heck, even Donald Trump sent Mike Pompeo over there, and they signed a deal without a lot of people knowing about it, about withdrawing troops and people from Afghanistan. Biden is living up to that commitment that Trump made, and he's engaged every resource we have as a nation, plus the resources of our allied nations, the coalition, to get people out. Now, what did people expect? I am old enough to remember Vietnam. That's my generation's war. Obviously, we didn't learn a thing from Vietnam because we went there to nation build. It didn't work. We go into Afghanistan for a purpose, and that was to get bin Laden and put Al-Qaeda, set them back a notch or two. That was accomplished. And yet we continue to stay in these places 20 years, and we're not going to change the culture or the nature of a society with guns and bullets. You know, Afghanistan has a nickname that people certainly should remember. It's recorded in just about every history book on the Middle East. And it's Afghanistan is famous for being the graveyard of empires. It has been invaded. They've been at war constantly for thousands of years. It's located in a critical spot in the world where before modern transportation, from caravans to whatever, wagons, people traversed Afghanistan. It's a nation of tribes, and each has its own distinct view of the world, its culture, its beliefs, and there's not going to be some foreign nation that comes in trying to convince them democracy, in our view, how it should be run, is the way to go. And yet we have sacrificed troops, we've sacrificed resources and citizens' lives over in Afghanistan, the Afghanis. Joe Biden has done the right thing, and that is to bring it to an end. None of this is easy, especially when you have a replacing government such as the Taliban. You just got to dig in and do the job, and getting the people out safely is foremost and primary. So I would like to see the Democrats, who, by the way, nobody's offered any ideas on how to do this any better. They like to whine, but I want to see some ideas come out of this. The Republicans, for political purpose, whine about it, but they, too, have no ideas or suggestions for the president to do it any better. And so it's time to pull behind this president and support him and help him get the job done. And that'll really be put to the test when we bring a lot of our allies, the interpreters, the Afghanis, back to America and relocate and resettle them. I've seen that happen before, too, with the Vietnamese, the Laotians, all the folks we brought over. The Somalis, you know, we brought tens of thousands of Somalis into the U.S. and from Africa, and I know we located thousands of them in the Minneapolis, Minnesota, St. Cloud, Minnesota area because the IAM, my own union, was very instrumental in setting up work programs for the folks that needed it. That's what we need to be focused on. It's what are we going to do when the last plane leaves Kabul? And how are we going to help people assimilate into the new worlds they're going to find themselves in? Not take pot shots at a president who did the right thing by bringing all of this to an end. And hopefully, this time, people will start to question whether the ideas of rushing into wars, such as we've done, and the way we've done it, is the best way to solve a problem. And I give the president high remarks. I support Joe Biden on this. He made the right decision. As tough as it is, he made a decision.
Right.
And I haven't seen that come out of the White House in quite a while. So
and he's sticking by it, too.
Pleased he's our president.
All right, we're going to leave it on that note. Well said, my man. Always appreciate your contributions to this show we call America's Workforce. You take care, stay safe, and Let's do this again next month, okay?
Okay, Flash. Thank you, and it's best to all your listeners.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Grant Provost will be joining us on behalf of the Ironworkers Local 7 out of New England.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with cancer after taking Zantac? If you have taken Zantac and have cancer, you may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to AFLCIO.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Real simple, Twitter handle is AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number two right now. Welcome a newcomer to the show. Grant Provost is his name. Grant is currently the business agent for Ironworkers Local 7 in Maine. He also helps run their apprenticeship program, and I'm sure we'll be touching on that. We're also going to get into offshore wind and pushing for project labor agreements, which is so important to our audience. Grant Provost, welcome to America's Workforce. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi, thank you for having me. I appreciate being here.
And I just want to point out, you're an iron worker, and I record this show at Iron Workers Local 17 in Cleveland, Ohio, which is the home of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and Museum, which, of course, was built, partially built, by the iron workers. Iron Workers Local 17. How about that?
Sounds good.
Okay, good, 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 good. Talk to me about your local, and I'm reading, maybe you can update this, see if it, I went on your website, and I'm reading, what is it, 3,500 members altogether? Is that right, in various states? What's the story?
Yeah, so Local 7 has, I think now, maybe 3,800. We've just taken in some new apprentices this year, and we're Massachusetts, Maine, Vermont, and New Hampshire.
Okay, you got a lot of territory there. I read in your bio here that you got quite a union background. Your dad was an iron worker and your mom was a teacher, is that right?
Yep, my father retired from Iron Workers Local 7 with 33 years, and my mom spent 25 with the Maine Teachers Association.
Okay, and I understand you've been all over the place traveling even as far away as Hawaii. Did you do that with the iron workers, or what's the story on that?
Yeah, I worked for I worked in Hawaii when I was out there for a little while. I was on in Eva Beach, and I've worked in quite a few states on the East Coast as well.
Okay, how's the work up there, New England area? Talk to me about that.
The work up here is going good. We're starting to get some projects like we never have never were getting before. We got a large hospital project coming up. It's about a $500 million project. We fought to get on it, and we're going to be good from everything to the reinforcing to the structural light iron and the curtain wall and glass is going to go good. So it's big to get a win like that in the Portland, Maine area.
Nice, nice. And I'm also hearing that there's, I guess, offshore wind projects. What's the story there?
Yeah, so off the coast of Maine is one of the windiest locations in the state. So I mean, in the country. So we're ideal for offshore wind. It's just the waters in the state of Maine are so deep. So the University of Maine right now has a floating hull design that they've been working on for about a decade. And so the hulls are going to be built on barges. They're going to be made out of reinforcing steel and post-tension cables, concrete. They'll build them. They'll put the tower on top of them. They'll submerge the barges, and then they'll tow them to where they're going about 35 miles offshore. It's each hull weighs between 10,000 and 15,000 tons.
Whoa. And that project is underway. Is that right?
The research array will start in 2025. So we got a little ways to go on that. But the first one, they're doing a pilot project off Monhegan Island, and that one will start in 2022.
All right. What about the training? Now, that sounds pretty technical to me. Maybe you could help me out. What's it going to take to make sure you have a skilled workforce for something like that, Grant?
Well, I mean, I think the building trades are pretty much going to be all over it. There's going to be some at-sea training that we're hoping we're going to be able to do through Maine Maritime Academy. We've talked about working with them. Local 7 in Massachusetts and Local 37 out of Rhode Island and the Cape, they're already working with Mass Maritime for their special at-sea training. So we're looking to create a relationship as far as that is. But as far as existing skills, our apprenticeship covers most of it. We teach post-tension cables, and we also do reinforcing rebar. And since the hulls are going to be made using basic foundation techniques, then we already have the skilled workforce. We just need the work.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Well, talk to me about your apprenticeship program. And this is really important. As you know, this is a 100% labor union show. We promote especially the trades because there's a lot of opportunities out there. So this is a good opportunity for you to talk about what Local 7 is doing to attract people to be an iron worker. What's the story there, Grant?
In Massachusetts, we have an apprenticeship coordinator, and he oversees everything. And I just I work underneath him basically in the state of Maine, and they have a pretty robust application period. This year, I believe there was over 1,000 applicants, and they've taken on a little less than 100. So there's a big call for getting into the trades. In Maine, I go on a lot of non-union job sites, or I try to. And once you get one person to kind of come the other way, I find that the rest of the recruiting is done by that person as soon as they see what kind of deal they're getting compared to the one that they had.
Uh-huh. What is the non-union components over there? I mean, is there a fight going on in, as far as organizing goes? What's the status there?
Yeah, there's a couple of bigger construction companies here that self-perform their own foundations, and they're definitely hard to deal with. They have no interest in anything to do with the union. But your bigger GCs that have been for the last 30 or 40 years our competition are starting to turn into construction managers, and the iron workers specifically are being able to work for them pretty consistent. Timbro right now, we're doing all their bridge decks, we're doing all their reinforcing. So we're entering into new markets we've never gotten into before.
You mentioned on the apprenticeship program there were 1,000 applications and you took about 100. Explain that part for me. What happened to the other 900?
I don't know what happened to them. There's a lot of good applicants, and that's kind of in the Massachusetts area. You know, that's where they get them. You can apply online, so you get a higher amount of participation.
Yeah.
But, you know, in Maine, we're running about 250, maybe 300 iron workers, and a lot of those guys are traveling out of state. So, you know, at the peak in the summertime, we're probably, 150 iron workers working.
I gotcha. All right. Let's talk about the legislature there. And I recall some years back, you had a really anti-union governor there. I forget his name. What was his name?
His name was Paul LePage. He was like openly racist. He was just like the biggest nightmare going. You know, it's kind of the direction the Republican Party's going in almost. But he was Trump before we had Trump was his slogan.
So he's long gone. What's the status now there with the governorship and the legislature in Maine?
Things are going a lot better, and you can really see how important it is to work your politics in order to help your membership out. In Maine, we have the trifecta right now, and it's Democrats own the House and the Senate. The president of the Senate is a union painter, Troy Jackson, 100% union man, great guy, real fighter. Janet Mills is a Democrat as well, governor. You know, she's done fairly well on labor issues, so... You know, when we were working with the developer in order to push the offshore wind bill through with the project labor agreement amendment attached to it, I don't think we could have done that if we didn't have leadership friends in the legislators in the legislative body.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's so important that you have the right components there, because we talked to people all around the country. I had South Carolina on, North Carolina, Tennessee. I mean, they're all right-to-work states, and it's ridiculous on what they have to deal with their legislatures. They just don't get it. So you're very, very fortunate there. And do you see that to be in place for quite some time?
You know, it's always a battleground every 2 years, but it is worth the time you invest in each campaign. You know, we've got Democratic representatives and senators that go to bat for us on the daily and push the governor to even to the left of where she already is. So it's big.
You don't have any people that would like to push right to work up there. I mean, we have in the state of Ohio, they always pop up in committee, and thankfully they're able to kind of knock it out of committee. But does that happen up there in Maine?
Yes, definitely. But it gets killed in committee. You know, we own most of the committees. So
that's the way to do it. That's the way to run a union, no doubt about that. So it sounds like things are doing pretty good for Local 7 for the iron workers. What's your projection, say, I don't know, 5-10 years out? Does it go that far? Is there a game plan that Local 7's putting together for the future?
Yep. You know, we have a really great manager, and he's investing some time and some money into the Maine, New Hampshire and Vermont, and we're succeeding. We're winning this big job that's coming up right now at Maine Medical. That's a $500 million job, and that'll probably go 2 or 3 years right there for the iron workers. There's an 18 story coming up in town. We're discussing it with the general contractor there, and we think we're going to be successful there. And after this little build and boom, even if it started to wind down in 2025, we're looking at the need of thousands of union construction workers in the state of Maine to keep up with the offshore wind. And that PLA will probably go between 3 to 5 years. So we're trying to stack the workout ahead of our membership.
Sounds like a pretty bright future there in Maine. Okay, the website, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's iwlocal7.org, iwlocal7.org. Is that right, Grant?
Yes.
Very good. Grant Provost, business agent for Iron Workers Local 7 out of Maine. I have to ask you one more question here. I don't know where you're located, but I had the opportunity to go to Maine. This was probably 30 years ago. It was back in the late 80s, and I went over to Bahaba, Maine. Beautiful area. And the lobster was to die for. Is that still the case over there, Grant?
Yeah, that's 100% the case. And if when you're shopping around your podcast, you got to hit up Lobster 207. They're about 250 boat captains formed a union this year and started a co-op, or maybe a few years back. But there's union lobsters to be bought, and you can buy them and have them shipped right to your house.
I am aware of that because I know they're affiliated with the Machinists Union, the International Association of Machinists. Yeah, Local 207. Yep. We, you know what, I have to have them back. That was years ago. But, yeah, union lobsters, that's what it's all about. All right. Grant, thank you so much for joining us. Local 7 of the Iron Workers. Take care, stay safe, and keep in touch, all right?
Thank you very much. Take care.
Always good to check in with the Iron Workers, one of the many proud sponsors of this show we call America's Workforce. That was Grant Provost, business agent for Local 7 in Maine, representing workers all through New England. All right, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, the latest from the Heat and Frost Insulators and the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.